Welcome to Signs Importance, a War Machine and Hordes podcast based out of Buffalo, New York. Today we are here with myself, Bill,
Paul, and Adam,
who will be your three normal hosts here on Signs Importance. First off, we'd like to introduce ourselves a bit, talk about who we are, what we do, get into some goals of our podcast here today, and then maybe talk about 2018 and our meta predictions for the factions that we're planning to see here. Talking about who we are, though, I'd like to start off with Adam.
Yeah, I'm the, semi-event organizer in Buffalo.
Fair.
I run tournaments, and then my deep-seated love is Kador. Or Kador, depending who you ask. My second faction is Mercs. I do love the dwarves. Those little stumpy legs. I think the thing about Kador is there's pretty straightforward faction. I like the solidness of the play and the things that I can just kill with an axe. Gets me going every time.
And I'm Paul. I play primarily Signar. Right now I've been playing Grimkin. I also have played a bit of Legion in Mark III. Been playing for about 5 years now. And I like all those factions because I like tricks, so all those factions, Signar, Legion, Grimkin, all fit into having lots of little nuances and tricks, and Signar is always fun because you get to shoot things, and shooting things is extremely fun. It's always fun to shoot something off the table before they can even attack you in melee, and playing Haley 2 is always very fun, although less fun now, but instead you just get to play Haley 3, which is also very fun and tilting for everyone involved, so that's great. And over to Bill.
And for myself, I've been playing War Machine and Hordes now for a little over 7 years. I've been in Buffalo for six of those years, and I've pretty much played almost every faction in the game at this point, except for Dirty Legion. And in Mark III, I have been primarily a Minions player, but I did have a stint from May through the Minions CID. With Krix, and I own a subset of that faction as well. I own Circle. I pretty much haven't played them since Mark II. To me, they lost a lot of the flavor that they had in Mark II, the reasons why I played them. And in doing so, I haven't really gone back to them. But they are still sitting there as dust collectors in my cabinet, but it's really my Minions that have taken off. I've gained the pig side since Mark II. And had a lot of fun with them. They really changed them in a lot of ways that I was hoping for with Mark III. All right, so we're hoping to do this podcast on a bi-weekly basis, but we wanted to kind of go over our goals for this podcast. We know that there is another podcast, Beer Machine, here in Buffalo, New York, and they've been going for a great long while at this point. And we're hoping to bring a little bit different of a spin in where we are looking to take our podcast. And one of the big things for me is, and maybe the other guys too, is that we're hoping that this gives us an aspect of the mental side of the game, just talking through
how things work.
Yeah, how things work, rules, interactions, competitive matchups, where we find things that would be difficult, what are some things that we believe are up and coming.
Definitely tactics-oriented.
Yeah, tactics-oriented. Looking into new pairings and maybe where we can take them. We all kind of look at things a little bit differently here. Paul looks at the game considerably different than myself. I tend to be a very aggressive player for the most part. I can back it off when I want to, but I tend to be extremely aggressive.
Yeah, I like to, you know, take points and take models where I can get them, and other than that, keep my stuff alive, play for usually a longer, you know, turn 5, 6, 7 game, unless some massive opening presents itself, but usually that's not the case with, especially Grimkin lately that I've been playing. Usually you're planning for a longer game.
I'm more attrition-orientated myself, so I like a lot of armor skew. A lot of denial where non-killing is involved.
Some of the other things we'd like to do is maybe highlight the Buffalo meta, where we see our meta's at. maybe even bring some locals on to talk about their faction specialties. We cover quite a few of the factions sitting here. We have 8 of the 13. But that doesn't mean that we're experts in everything, and sometimes even within those factions, different people are playing different casters and can give you some highlights there with it. But we all do play against each other. Our local nights here in Buffalo tend to be Tuesdays and Thursday nights, and we play quite a few games, so maybe we can share some of those. Not so much battle reports, per se. I think we kind of talked about not...
Yeah,
going round by round battle reports.
Yeah, maybe just interesting points that happened, but nothing.
Yeah, if something interesting happens, some like interesting rules interaction or, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
comes up.
And then last but not least, we're also hoping to highlight some local events here in Western New York and the Southern Ontario area, which is the area that we frequent for tournaments, both for War Machine Weekend qualifiers and just kind of your local monthly steamroller. Adam, for instance, throws a pretty much bi-monthly steamroller. We have a great tournament organizer out in the Rochester area at Millennium Games named Gail. She's been lovely for the meta out there, and even for us, being only an hour to drive to. And then the Southern Ontario meta is quite busy and bustling as well, and we get a good chance to play over there quite a bit as well. And it's interesting there because they're talking about meta. Their meta is actually quite a bit different than ours.
Yeah,
they got a lot more Kador than we have here.
Yeah, they do have quite a bit of Kador.
Yeah, you go there, and I think if you go to a tournament up there versus a tournament out in maybe Rochester, you're going to get far, far different things to play against.
Well, Rochester's been bitten by the Grimkin bug.
You can look at their
Facebook page, and their the front of their Facebook page always has what's the most popular faction.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into the meat and potatoes of our podcast today. Let's talk about 2018. What does everyone expect out of their 2018 when it comes to War Machine and Hordes?
What I expect is I'm going to get the new Manowar CIDs coming up. So I suspect to see them a lot more in tournaments because people, especially in Kator, really like Manowar. But there hasn't been a big reason to play them. I suspect Old Witch is going to change the meta. I know it already is, but I think it was a lot slower than people thought. You're going to start seeing a lot of her with the Winter Guard and or Jaws. So I think she runs Jax pretty good.
What about Iron Fang?
The Iron Fang thing is good. It just has some pretty hard counters. A lot of things that do auto wounds really mess them up. I think the big problem is there's no ranged game, which can be problematic in some situations, especially with terrain, how much there is.
I think for me personally, you know, I'm playing Grimkin currently, and I'm going to play Grimkin until at least mid-April, I think. But after that, I'm not 100% certain where I'll go. I might go back to Signar. I just got a bunch of the Trencher releases, and those definitely calling me. But I think one of my goals this year is to play... I played a bit of Legion last year when I first picked them up, and I don't think I gave them the time that they deserved. So I think one of the things I want to do this year is to get about 30 games with Legion over the course of the year.
That new Ogryn theme's coming out, right?
Yeah, and that's going to definitely maybe push me back to Legion after Grimkin instead of Signar, possibly, depending on, you know, what comes out of the Ogryn CID. But just want to give, you know, Legion a fair shake at some point.
And for me, my goal is to hopefully get back to War Machine Weekend. I think that's the ultimate goal for me, is to make the Invitational again. I made it a few years ago. And then the last couple years, I haven't been able to play in as many tournaments as I had my little boy. You can see him featured on our Facebook page at Current in our top bar there, him and his curious face. But for me, I think that's the big thing. I'm hoping to go to 4 qualifiers, maybe 5. Over the course of the year, 3 of those being conventions. I know that we'll all be at the Southern Ontario Open.
Yep.
definitely.
Come the beginning of April.
Can't say enough good things about that event.
Yeah. Can't say enough good things about daily sushi meals.
Yes.
But
also, the organizers are really good. They did a good job with that.
One of them's even a local Buffalo guy now.
Yeah.
But for me, that is one of the big things there. And then for the most part, I think it's going to be, at least for the foreseeable future, it's going to be Minions with a side of Minions. I look at that faction as a whole. I've been playing it for a while. The beef that CID gave it was a huge factor for me wanting to play it even more, going back to it.
Yeah, they're a real faction now.
I still wear that Beer Machine shirt every so often. But on top of that, I'm excited about all the casters. I look at 75% of the casters in the faction. I know that's not that many, but I can think of lists, and I'm excited to play them. I just wish I had the time to play all of those.
Yeah, and we're all very much looking forward to playing against Endless Dracodiles and things with Enliven and Junior Warcasters, and
yeah,
it's going to be great.
It's beautiful.
I could really live without that snake.
Yes, it's beautiful. All right, so let's go to by faction, where we think we're going to be, or what we think we're going to be facing here in 2018. I think there's a realization that we know that CID could change some of this, and we'll probably see some of that. Not only does CID make things stronger in some aspects, but we also, when CID hits, people tend to get a little excited about the stuff that came out of CID. I think that's the, or what I call the new shiny syndrome. It's kind of a thing. I guess I have it a little bit with Minions, so I can't say much, but also it's fun. It changes the faction, and in the case of Minions, truthfully, it feels like a brand new faction with this, between the stuff that they're getting and the things that were changed. But per Paul, I guess that we will go in
PP order, PP as God order. Intended.
No, God did not intend this.
First in our hearts.
Yeah, they're the worst.
This is Signar, obviously.
Or last in my rectum.
No.
No, they're the worst. That's true.
Yeah. Speaking of new shinies, Signar got a ton of sweet things lately.
That's true. So let's go ahead and start with Signar. Where do we think Signar is going to be with their casters and lists in 2018? How about the new shiny, Paul?
I mean, for the people who have the time to put in, you're definitely going to see Haley 3 Gravediggers is the main
list.
And I say for people with the time, because if they're not, I mean, if you're playing in a death clock environment, which most tournaments are, time turns could be even more brutal for a Haley 3 player, I guess. But if you're playing against someone who's inexperienced with Haley 3, you're gonna, they can easily, death clock can definitely be a problem. There's so many options, but if you have the time to put in, or you're playing against a player who really knows what they're doing, she is it's just incredibly strong. There's so many options on what you can do in a given turn. Strong scenario game, great assassination, and is really hard to... She can play a really strong game all the way through turn 7, really, really late. If you don't have certain tools like magical weapons or blessed or something like that, you're in for a rough time, or have... You don't have an answer to a cloud wall, you're in for a rough time. There's just so many problems that list presents. And a lot of that stuff is innate in the Gravediggers theme force, even without some of the things that Haley 3 brings. So I think you're definitely going to see Gravediggers as one of the two lists, probably led by Haley 3, but possibly some of the other casters like Siege 2, Siege 1.
Yeah, there was... I've gotten to play a couple games into her, and I can notice that time is a big issue with her because she takes a lot of precision.
Yeah.
And so you have to set up everything within 5 inches of one of the echoes and then dug in and reposition right and get the cloud wall off. And she's tricky, but it pays off in the long run because she's just got all the defense and all the like cloud walls. You can't see through them, and she makes you have to ask some really hard questions.
Yeah, if you don't commit and come into her stuff, she's perfectly fine. I mean, that list is perfectly fine and just killing and doing plenty of damage from range. And if you do come in, generally you can't charge. Even if you can charge, because you have a way to ignore clouds, or they don't have the cloud all up, you're generally dealing with defense 15 or higher models, and that's obviously a problem for most things, and then all the trenchers are tough. It just kind of snowballs on top of all the different effects.
I think the interesting thing for me, though, is I think on the competitive end, we're going to see Haley 3. The question is what is paired with Haley 3? And I think that's going to be the big aspect to where Signar goes here. They have a lot of options. I think you mentioned a couple, right? Siege 2.
Yeah, I think Siege 2, either in Gravediggers or maybe Storm Division, is a good option.
Striker 2.
Striker 2 is another great one, possibly in Storm Division. I think you could see Nemo 3 in Storm Division with a couple Storm Striders, which are just absolutely gross with Nemo 3. Put three or four Fireflies on the board with two Storm Striders, and then fill out with whatever you want, and you just get to kill whatever, and you can either just blow people off the board, or, you know, if they're not careful with their caster and put them near an objective, or, you know, a model like a Colossal or a huge base or battle engine or something, you can, you know, just get an Electroleap Assassination into casters. That's very reliable.
Small part of me is glad that you're not playing Signar right now, because you were always the Nemo 3 player in this.
Yeah, Nemo 3 is awesome. Group. Yeah,
I think we have to make an honorable mention for Cray being in that second spot.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. What's what's the Jack theme?
Heavy metal. Heavy metal. I think Cray and heavy metal with, to me the way I build them is at least two Centurions, just because those guys are super fast with reposition. And you can make it so that they can't be charged, and they outthreat you by a ton of inches, and you can't charge them. So they can theoretically go in, stab some things, reposition out, and spend a focus to not be able to be charged. So they can be a massive problem. I've seen Cray lists with like three Centurions that are a real, real problem.
And then last but not least, maybe a little Striker 1 in there.
Yeah, you can see Striker 1, but I think double Colossals or, you know, three huge base lists are probably not the way to go in this scenario.
Yeah, that definitely seems to be pushing him more and more away from things.
They usually have a gun jack, right, because of flare and beacon to get that off.
Yeah, with Cray. Yeah. And, I mean, you could also see some Haley, too, in heavy metal. She's still strong. I mean, if you bring a low model count army, she's still going to wreck you on her feet turn.
I can't believe we actually just talked about her last out of all that group. It's weird after all this time. But it's actually exciting for Signar players to an extent. Like, I'm sure there's some people that are sad to lose Haley 2 in its old iteration, but also nice to realize that it's okay to explore other things in the faction.
I mean, as fun as it was taking other people's turns for them, it was, you know, it's nice to be able to play almost any caster in the faction. I mean, I would, like, 80% of them are quite good.
Yeah, definitely tournament worthy, at least.
All right, so that's where we see Signar, so it looks like just a bunch of Haley 3 and second list, season to flavor, or season 4 flavor. Next up in PP's wild order, we have the Protectorate of Menoth. This is a tough one. It's not one that we're seeing a ton right here in Buffalo. Our normal Protectorate player is currently a Dirty Haley 3 player. But in doing so, from what I can see, it still seems like Amon in Testament may be the way to go. Amon in Creator's Wrath and Testament in the Exemplar theme.
Yeah, because they just got, what's the new Exemplar guy? The crossbow dude.
Yeah, I don't think that changed much. But yes, double crossbow dude does seem to be pretty good.
Yeah, I've also heard of some people even building Amon lists in Faithful Masses. You get a good variety of infantry units available to you as well, just for scenario games.
Yeah, but nowadays the way all the themes work is in the ruling there is you get the one unit, the Idrians, for free.
Yeah.
Not for free, but you get them in any of the lists, right?
Right, because they're mercs also.
Yeah. Hand of Vengeance on your jacks, though, plus synergy is pretty sweet, though.
Yeah, that's true. But and for that matter, though, you do get Idrians, but Faithful Masses, they can actually take the UA for free, right? so.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, in that list you can get dervishes up to POW 20 base, I think, with choir plus Hand of Vengeance and synergy. It is pretty gross.
That is pretty gross. The circle player in me doesn't love that.
Yeah.
The ex-circle player. That was always one list that I was a little worried about at times. And even as a Minions player, I think it's not... Amon as a whole is still not one of my favorite situations there. It's just a lot of high power, a lot of boxes out there. And Ras could probably handle it, but it can definitely be a problem there.
He's still very killable. So. That's has always been his main weakness. He doesn't camp a lot in his...
himself.
Shot.
The big question there, though, is the second list of Testament. Are we still going to see Testament be as good as it was during or in the post Ghost Fleet meta? Is he still going to cause plenty of problems for other factions? I know Signar was struggling with him at times.
Yeah, he was weird with Signar because if you had a list with a ton of Electroleaps, he wasn't very good because he didn't get souls off the Electroleaps. But
in this post-Gravediggers era?
He might be. I mean, I think one big thing with him is if the Satixis theme comes out with they keep the remove from play aspect of on their melee weapons, because Testament was always a great Crick's answer, but if all of a sudden everyone's playing Satixis theme that can remove from play all of his infantry models that don't have particularly good stats in melee, then you might see a dip in Testament.
Also, I think the backlash, because he doesn't have a whole lot of health boxes, does he? He doesn't really like Satixis.
He's got 18, but you know, he doesn't tend to camp. He doesn't tend to camp a lot though either, because he's usually... He can if he really wants to. I mean, he could sit on a huge stack after getting a bunch of souls, but usually he wants to spend pretty far down to bring as many models as he can safely bring back every turn. He's definitely, you know, killable. I think Thyra is also going to be quite popular, being on the active duty roster.
Really?
Huh. Okay. She's just versatile. She's got, you know, a hit buff, strength buff.
I like the Dark Horse.
And she's got a delivery mechanism with occultation.
Yeah.
Threat range increasing feat. I mean,
RFP.
Yeah, she's just got a lot of tools.
That's fair. All right, so after Protectorate of Minoth, we have Kador.
Kador.
Go at him.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of Old Witch. Just her ability to deny gun lines is super strong. Also, she's new. Like I said, the new shiny is, you know, strong with her. She's a really beautiful model. I don't think Strekov 2 is getting played as much as I thought he would. And I think just because everyone wants to run him with Assault Commandos, and Assault Commandos are, well, not great. I think you're going to see Active Duty Roster's Peace Orchard, right? So you're going to see her a lot, because her assassination game is... always on point. Just the ability to stop your army from doing anything if you're running an infantry heavy list. I'm really excited to see about the new Manowar. They just spoiled, what was that, Dragon Dude?
The art?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He looks pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. Double hammer swinging.
Yeah, the... what is he attached to again?
The Democor.
Democor. Yeah. Oh god.
Yeah.
It's something that everyone's actually got to go out and find because they don't own. I think on top of this though, and I know Adam doesn't play him, I don't think Butcher 3 is necessarily going anywhere.
No.
His ability to have RFP, being able to take out large swaths of either infantry or Jax or Beast himself is something that's quite nice. His survivability,
especially with Winter Guard Command
that he has, yeah. And then of course you have Winter Guard Command, and truthfully though, he might be able to go into a few things. He might be one where Jaws still isn't complete garbage in. As you already said, Winter Guard Command is still amazing with him, as he's the melee support, and the Winter Guard just sit back and go to town over a period of time. And then last but not least there, flat one. In the Steamroller, the Winter Guard list of 3 to 4 units of Winter Guard and 3 jacks on top of it, that's a pretty good with combination
yeah.
in Steamroller 2017.
Bunch of rockets and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting here is as we go through all of these, note that we're talking about lists that are going to incorporate both jacks and infantry with this. This is a big thing for Steamroller 2017. I think we're going to start leaving the days. We already mentioned, I think it was Paul when we mentioned Striker 1, the days of Double Colossal are probably over.
Yeah.
It's very difficult in the Steamroller.
Balanced lists are now king.
Yeah, it's definitely again. A lot more combined arms.
Yeah,
maybe, which is good. I mean, that's the way that I personally like to play the game is balanced.
Yeah, maybe double balanced battle engine still.
Double battle engine. But you can usually play 2 battle engines for sometimes less than the price of one of your Colossals.
That's true.
Or Gargantuans.
That's true. I mean, that's... Double minions, battle engines of any variety is less than a Dracodile.
Yeah, so. double Stormstriders is less than either Stormwall or Hurricane.
It's pretty interesting to look at. But again, I think Vlad 1 is definitely something we will see out there still. I think maybe he lost flavor a little bit in the sense that he might be declared a little boring at times.
Yeah, he's a little vanilla. He does the same thing. I cast Signs of Importance again. And maybe Windwall if there's some counter-shooting.
It's a pretty good trick, though.
I mean, look at our name.
it's one trick, but it's pretty good.
So,
yeah.
If you don't have an answer to shooting, he will just shoot you off the board without too much trouble.
I think the big thing here is that this faction, more than most of these other factions, rely on one of two things. The fact that they do have a diverse staple of casters. So you can play 2/3 of the casters, maybe even more than that, and be happy with it and make some competitive pairings, especially with, and I think we're going to see this go through every time we talk about some of these factions, Ghost Fleet leading.
Yeah.
Kador probably got hurt by Ghost Fleet more than, in my opinion, any other faction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that's true. I built just like out of theme to try to answer Ghost Fleet, and it did not go well.
Right. So... Yeah, we'll see what... I think it's going to be bright between Man of War CID, which I'm sure you'll hear about on here because Adam loves Man of War more than anything else in this game. But on top of that, just having Ghost Fleet go away will be a huge step up for him. It opens up their list pairs and what they can really do with things.
I think all of Kador's casters, maybe more than any other faction, spend their jack points so well. Like, every caster, it's just... You know, if you don't want to spend too much focus with your jacks, you can just be able to play, you know, 2 Marauders and a Juggernaut, and you've got a really solid battle group that's hard to remove, and some other casters and other factions don't, even with the increase in jack points, are kind of left sometimes thinking, like, ah, I really don't, like, I'm putting in jacks just because, you know, whatever, they don't really fit what I'm trying to do as much, but... Having these armor 20 roadblocks in every list that you're not really paying for is just excellent.
I've been loving Adam when Adam plays Kator versus me, and I've been trying to push him to play more of them, is when he plays his Iron Fang themes to have a second destroyer. The point drop of that jack really made a huge difference in what it can do, and talking about the jack points it fits, those 27, 28 jack point casters, you know what fits perfectly? 2 destroyers.
2 destroyers.
And yeah, you're not going to want them in Winter Guard theme because you want something that hits a little harder since you have all the shooting already, but when you have 30 IFP on the board or somewhere around there, having 2 support shooty jacks that can sit back and take out things that the Iron Fang can't quite reach, especially with Arcing Fire, is huge.
Yeah, the upgrade with him getting a 4-inch AoE is actually a little bigger than I thought it would at first. Because that makes a big difference.
Alright, so that was our feelings on Kador. Let's move on to the Dragon Father, Krix. Krix is a weird one, right? We're still waiting for the CID to come out, if it stands, we will see the drop of Ghost Fleet. I think that's a give me there. Truthfully, I did play quite a bit of Ghost Fleet through 6 months of 2017. And one of the biggest things there is as soon as they dropped off Scourge off of Denegar 1, that made it a huge deal, along with the feat change of not being able to run and charge. But they decided to go a little bit further. It's what we call here in the Buffalo group the PP double tap. And they also took out some jack points from her and nerfed the Ghost Pirates. And of course, the guys in the Buffalo area know my feeling on the Ghost Pirate situation, as I feel like they might have taken it a bit too far. But I don't necessarily think they took Denny too far. I think Denny's still a viable caster. I'm glad to see that they didn't just put her completely into the dirt. But the Ghost Pirates, I think, because of Denny, they went and hurt them with all the other casters in the faction, which makes me a little sad to see that. But I think when we look at lists and what's not going to go away is Dark Host, more specifically Coven Dark Host, and then some sort of pairing to go with Coven Dark Host.
Yeah, Coven's still really going to be really strong. I mean, they have the closest thing now to a true, you know, to use the magic term, you know, time walk feat, I think, in the game.
Whoa. Rask would like to talk to you, sir.
Okay, Rask is very close. Very close. But they are maybe just one step above Rask. Just because of the greater control area and the fact that it's no, like, absolutely no line of sight. I mean, I think what? Rask is probably similar, but Rask can't spread out as far necessarily.
Adam egged me on to play Coven with my Ghost Fleet pair, and eventually I did, and I ended up liking it quite a bit. And I was playing a double Seether version and stuff, and I liked it, and I played it in some big tournaments and things. He egged me on, but I think the thing that you guys complained about was that you got the line of sight feat, and you kind of got that's what they do, and it's fluffy as well. But the thing that you guys seemed to complain about the most was the minus to Matt and Rat as well, because it was one of those things where, yeah, it makes your line of sight worse, but what it took away then on top of it was if you had, like, long walking Cav or something, now they're hitting at two less Matt, it made it kind of a huge situation.
Yeah, you couldn't, the option of trampling a heavy in to, you know, kill an arc node or that kind of thing, it gets a whole lot worse when your heavy is mat 4 or mat 5 than their native mat 6 or 7.
Yeah,
it's a big deal.
The debuff is just so overwhelming sometimes, because especially when you're trying to go after those arc nodes, they're already like defense 14, 15, aren't they?
They're 14s now. They're 15s in mark 2.
Right, so if you're trying to hit them anything that's, you know, mat 7 innately, it's now mat 5, and you need 9s.
Well, it even puts things, like, because I was playing with Banes of various sorts, and it puts them within a lot harder to hit range. You're going from needing 5s or 6s to needing 7s or 8s. It's a huge...
Well, and with the increase in battle engines, they also love seeing battle engines across the table, because guess what Shadowbind is really good against?
Yeah, that's true, too. I didn't get to do that as much in my build, because I played 2 Seethers over 2 Arc Nodes, but nonetheless, that was a big deal.
Yeah, I've had my Storm Strider Stygian Abyss a couple times. It doesn't feel good.
I'd apologize, but you're a dirty Signar player.
No, it doesn't feel good.
So, with that, though, the question is what to pair with it now. I know that a lot of Crix players are going to start talking about the new Denny 2, especially with her in Dark Industries, or Black Industries. But and that's probably going to be a pretty strong list, because she could take out a lot of infantry with Hellmouth on her own, so she can dedicate the rest to really beating things with Jax, or heavies with Jax, Damnation, and Carapace going a long way. Damnation off of her and Carapace off of the theme. The other big one I think that is kind of got a Vlad 1 theme to it when it comes to me, but I did play her before. Again, Adam asked me to switch to Coven and give her a try a bit. Was Scar 1. Scar 1 is boring, but she's still very, very strong. It's kind of one of those things. Anytime you can raise base stats, yeah, it's going to be good in this game. Between Dark Guidance and her feat going +5/+5, +5 to armor and +5 to strength, being a huge situation. There's probably no other caster in the game that runs a Stalker better.
No.
And Stalkers are pretty scary as they are in any caster running them.
I think when the Stixis theme comes up, she's going to be really strong in that.
Yeah, because Dark Guidance works for the chicks too. So yeah, that would be... Yeah, she'll definitely be strong there. The problem with the Stixis theme, though, is she loses a big portion of her. The Stixis theme, where it's out, but the CID isn't out yet, though we are going to see a change to it, doesn't allow the Scarlock Thrall or the Wither Shadow combine. So therefore, she doesn't have a good way to make her free focus with it. So you might not see her in that as much as you might think. I still think she's going to be good in Dark Host for sure. She actually, before I quit playing Crix for a little while, I was even running her in Black Industries and using the Wither Shadow combine with some Scrap Thralls to eat. And I think as long as we see things like we haven't gotten there yet, but like Magic 1 with high armor, high def trolls.
Yeah, they do not want to see that.
No. Stalkers are definitely going to be something, though, that rips into that list on feat turn.
Yeah, because they're blessed. Because why not?
And Grievous Wound.
Yeah, why not?
So, yeah. Paul, if you couldn't tell, Paul has a hatred for Stalkers. He's been touched a few bad ways with them.
No, but the best way to kill Stalkers is to set Fireflies right between two of them and Electroleap into them.
That's pretty good. Yeah, they get touched. They tend to fall over. But the question is who's doing the touching first?
Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like generally with Crix, it's probably going to be what we think is probably Coven with Dark Host, and then maybe some kind of Black Industries, whether it's like Scar 1, Lich 3, or maybe
Lich 3, yep, that's been Denegra going around. 2,
or
especially with Keith Christensen.
Or Satixis theme. You know, Dark Host with Coven plus Black Industries or Satixis theme of some variety.
Depending on where the new Slaughter Fleet stuff comes out, though, talking about Stalkers, giving Stalkers gang?
Yeah, that's also gross.
That's pretty silly. That's... So I could see that being a huge thing as well. They have the problem there, though, that the Scarlock Thrall being an undead piece and the Satixis and the Slaughter Fleet being living themes, the Scarlock Thrall is not allowed with it, so therefore you don't have that Spell Slave access, so it probably still won't be a Scar 1 situation. But you probably don't need to. There's going to be plenty of other good casters to play that in. I know that one of the lists that I was favoring toward the end of my Crix time was some Gaspy 1 as well.
Yeah. I mean, you're definitely going to see some Scar 3 too when she comes out eventually this year, just because she'll be brand new.
I definitely think you're going to start seeing Morty also.
Yeah, that's
right. Cause,
which Morty?
Morty 1, actually.
Was that Whoa! Was okay, I want to hear this.
Well, I was talking to somebody about all the repair shenanigans. Is that Morty 1 who has the...
She has repair and then...
Well, she has Derelis. She has an attachment that helps.
Yeah.
With that...
Because you can run Deathjack in that theme, right?
In Black Industries, you can.
Yeah. Right. And I was thinking there was some repair shenanigans because she does the repair stuff, right? Her jacks get scavenged, or is that Morty 2?
No, that's Morty 2.
Okay, then I'm thinking of Morty 2.
I'm less excited now.
I'm sorry. because Deathjack can repair off living, and then he can repair off dead, you know, warjacks and stuff.
Right.
So it's going to be a lot of repair shenanigans with him. Carapace is going to keep him alive from shooting.
You can also have failsafe on him too. And right. And then he doesn't care about crippled systems, and he's armor 21 plus plus Carapace.
It also gives you two locomotion tricks a turn with 42. Yeah. Deathjack is one of those where I don't know if Deathjack always needs to be played in Black Industries. I think sometimes getting two lesser jacks and some leftover change might be better sometimes. Deathjack with 42 probably is a huge deal. Excellent, between Failsafe, as you already said, but also having two locomotions being her main spell for the turn. And if you land the feet on a big target with him, forget it.
Yeah.
It's just dead with it. But yeah, 42 could see some play. It's not one that she's being talked about much. And she didn't make the ADR list for the second time around. She was in last seasons, but she's not in this season. So we'll see if she makes it. I know some people were playing her on ADR last year.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
Also, that model's really cool. All
right, so next up in PP order is the Retribution of Syra. Oh.
This is one that none of us play. I played a bit in Mark 2.
Yeah, we talk about it quite a bit, though.
Yeah. We've got a buddy who is playing them currently, and
I think the big thing there is, and I think going to be their key to their list pair, because it can cover so much, is going to be Kalissa with two crickets.
Oh my gosh, learn to love the cricket, rep players. It's so good.
Yes, that thing is just beyond scary. And just so you know, cricket means the Arcantric Force Generator. That's what we call it here. We call it the Noisy or Angry Cricket. And it is what it got in the CID update for Battle Engines is just amazing. It's toolbox, being able to have attacks boosted, be able to knock things down, being able to make rough terrain is just beyond good.
Just get them in a zone and don't put any of your own models near them so that someone has a charge target where they end in melee range.
Certainly always run turn one.
Not being able to charge them is really huge, though.
Yeah, they're incredibly survivable.
Well, and then they're like, oh, by the way, here's Carapace, too. Have a nice day.
Yeah, they can be weak to single-wound infantry because they don't. They do have gunfighter, but if you've engaged them with some single-wound infantry that have ran up to it and they can't unengage the cricket before it activates, it does have to shoot the guys that are standing right in front of it. So that's one way to mitigate it.
But watch out, though, for infantry that's got longer range, though. Gunfighter's only half-inch, and if the infantry has, like, a 2-inch range, it could be a problem.
But generally speaking, if it's shooting one infantry model, that's...
The question is why are the infantry models getting past your halberdiers?
Oh, yeah, this is... It's not easy to do, but if you can do it.
Yeah, and Kalissa just has one of those control feats. It doesn't seem like a control feat at first, but when you start playing against it, it really is a control feat.
She's a great toolbox caster.
Yeah. So, and she brings a nice range game and melee game to the mix, and she's one that she can do something.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's pretty solid. I'd say the only thing to watch out with the crickets is ambushing models.
That is true in current state.
Yep.
So. Ambushing murder crows or something like that could definitely take that thing off if it's in a bad spot.
Yeah.
If you get it in the back arc, yeah, it's bad.
I think her only downside is if we get to a point where there is a lot of armor on the board, she gets to a point where she's not able to do too much to a certain extent. I know the rest of her army helps a bit with halberdiers and such, but... I think she strives to maybe be able to hit a little bit harder. So I think for the second list, you're going to start seeing things that can have a little bit higher of a damage output. Maybe a Vyros.
Yeah.
One or two.
Yeah.
Why we don't see him more, Adeptus Ron.
Ron is just stupid, but I think you don't see him more because he can require a good amount of playtime to really become good with. I mean, if somebody's really experienced with Ron, there's generally almost no safe place on the board other than maybe like literally behind a forest, a large forest. that could work maybe, but you're still not guaranteed safe in that instance, but he's got great scenario game. And but
well, sometimes he's able to just deal with heavies with his TK tricks and right. being able to push away with the other units that he brings and such. And then he's got a reasonable armor buff in his feet, or damage buff with his feet, being a pretty big deal as well.
Also, he has polarity shield, which...
yeah, we have a cricket situation all over again.
Yeah, you just put it on a unit now. And
so. Yeah, or you can put it on, you can stick it on like a Helios or that kind of thing.
The last caster that interests me in the faction is Alara 2. She's one of the few in the faction that has a armor debuff or some way to buff damage.
She's on active duty roster too, which makes more relevant.
And Boundless Charge is a sneaky damage buff too, saving a focus on a jack.
Another POW 19 when you factor in an Arcanist buff on a jack is definitely something. Yeah, she's an interesting toolbox. She's really different than a lot of rat casters. She relies on debuffs a little bit more than buffing her own stuff.
Well, and her feet just gives balance charge as a whole, so not only is it speeding up all the models in the faction, but also, again, all those jacks getting the free focus off of it there.
She does give Pathfinder out to everything, which is something that Rhett does not have.
That's true.
So that's excellent.
Yep. And the feet's sneaky, too. I didn't realize this until I played it once a couple months back. The feat isn't just model, it's model unit.
Yeah.
So you can catch only one or two guys in a unit and get the whole damn thing.
Yep, yep.
For it, which is pretty good.
Yeah, and she's focus 7. I always forget that she's focus 7.
Right.
And not it. She feels like a 6, you know, but no, she's a 7.
And then, yeah.
I think Phyros is going to be big.
Which one?
The first one, Phyros. Don Lord Phyros.
Huh.
Because he does have mobility, which is +2 speed in Pathfinder, and we all know Pathfinder isn't their big strong suit. But he's very much combined arms, because of his feet, gives everyone flank, and the ability to have bird's eye, just everything is his command range is 10.
Terrain is huge right now, for sure.
Well, it's his control range, too, so it's his jack, like his jacks in his control range ignore...
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's bird's eye is a fantastic ability. And with all the terrain on 2018 boards, especially with generally there seems to always be a forest somewhere near the middle of the board, whether it's just off center or in the middle of a zone or something.
Well, it's one of the few things that actually ignore forests now.
Right. Yeah. There's very few things that actually let you ignore forests for line of sight purposes. Being able to park a jack like Imperatus, or even just a generic heavy right behind a forest where it's pretty much immune from being charged but can still threaten an entire zone. It's a good place to be.
So yeah, maybe we'll see those as a second caster, but it always feels like it's Kalissa and somebody else.
Kalissa plus... I would, if I had to guess, I would say Kalissa plus one of the viruses would be what I would expect.
Yep. All right, then we have the Convergence of Cirrus. So can we say, outside of ADR, Lucant Plus?
That's what it feels like. Right. I feel like it's just Axis Plus. I mean, Axis and Lucant. I feel like you have to have a good reason for not playing Axis, to be honest, more than Lucant.
Well, they decided that it was a good idea to put them on ADR, so...
Yeah, so if you play ADR, Axis can play his million single wound infantry guys with 4 foundries and then just swap in those 2 TEPs when he wants to.
Yep. What's the chances, though, that with Axis and LeCant out there that we might see Orion trying to sneak in there a bit?
I mean, Orion is on the active duty roster, so... Definitely seems like a viable second list of Axis.
Fair. Well, is it possible that Orion and Axis are probably the ADR pairing then, because LeCant not being on?
Yeah, I mean, some people really love Iron Mother, so you could get some people who just want to backlash the world and play Iron Mother.
How do you feel about Backlash there, Adam?
Oh, no, I hate it with a deep, seething passion. It's pretty much the worst, especially when I'm running one of my squishier casters.
Right. So, yeah, that is a possibility there. But, you know, the interesting thing that I think is going to come out of Convergence is whether or not they get away from just playing their Jack theme or their, as I call it, their Shield Guard theme. With another caster, will they get away from the Galvanizer spam in Axis and move on to Infantry spam and actually get back into using Enigma Foundries, which I think is an extremely strong list. It gives them a different pairing away from their Father the Cont list being all Jacks, probably with a Prime Axiom. And then with that in mind, being able to practice enough to play it on clock, much like Testament or Haley 3 Gravediggers.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a Convergence player locally who, you know, who's already learned over years of playing Convergence that when you play that Axis list, you take your 4 or 5 CMAs every turn and then pass. and you spend the rest of your time moving, and you don't take the random, you know, 20 attacks. You just do a couple big CMAs, kill some guys, ding up a heavy or something, and pass. But I think the infantry list is his strongest list at the moment, because if you don't have an answer, it can just roll you on scenario or attrition. And Axis also has one of the few feats left that's a speed debuff feat that also prevents charging still. And there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, that feat is pretty devastating. Especially if you're running like dwarves, who are not fast already.
Oh, shorty.
Or Kador heavies, speed 2. Enjoy.
Adam's having nightmares over here.
Speed 2 can't charge. Sweet.
No, I'm okay. Yeah, because the big thing is you can't give him boundless charge because it doesn't do anything.
It doesn't do anything. And, yeah, I mean, if you have some good guns, you can maybe answer the Enigma Foundries, but then you're playing guns when their other list is generally filled with a million shield guards.
So yeah, that's the tough part, right? Is I think by going with one infantry list and one with the Jack theme, you're going to be playing the situation of, oh, well, what list am I going to get? Oh, this list is really good versus one, but not the other, and right. Then vice versa.
Yeah, if you have one of the factions, if you play a faction with which has a theme force with the innate move from play on, like your warrior models, melee attacks like trolls or scorn, they have theme forces with that, then you're probably in a pretty good spot. Because then they're just not gonna. I don't think they can take the chance of dropping that into you.
Right.
So you're probably getting their other list, and usually scorn and trolls are pretty fine with smashing into an armor brick like Lucan or an Orion. So they're okay there. So that could be Convergence's weakness, is those couple factions that have removed from play innately all over the place, but it still has to be a widespread removed from play.
All right. Well, the interesting thing anything about them is that we find that they've got a pretty good chance, because they're a small faction, of playing on ADR. They could play Orion and Axis for their ADR pairings. But I think this next faction, Mercenaries, the last War Machine faction, that one has probably the best chance in a Masters format to play ADR. They received both Magnus II and Osram on their ADR. You gotta be kidding me.
Yeah, that Irregulars with Osram is pretty serious stuff.
I feel like this is a pairing that we would see normally out of them.
Yeah.
Even outside of ADR.
Just enjoy your 80 points of specialists between the two between the two lists.
Right? So, you know, and Osram's doing the same situation. A few heavies, some gun bunnies to go with it. The heavies usually being drillers. And then now they can stick some infantry in and their battle engine isn't half bad either, especially with some Forge Guard running around the board, being able to replenish those Forge Guard over a period of time. They really have a pretty strong dealing here. What I think we're going to see out of the Osram player, though, is is, are they going to bother with Hammerstrike Theme Force anymore? Are they going to move to regulars as well and start picking up some of those sweet buffing solos that they don't get in Hammerstrike?
Yeah, things like you can take Dahlia and Scareth and throw Bullet Nodger. Yeah. On the snake, for example,
right,
is a good one.
Yeah, I'm even thinking some of the smaller ones, going back and having a Iris one or a Rupert or those sorts of things that are regulars.
Yeah, I think you're going to see that a lot, and I think you're going to see Jack Marshalls out of that list a lot, too.
Jack Marshalls?
Yeah. So you don't really see too many running around the board right now.
Yeah, Jack Marshall, they fixed it quite a bit, but it's still a tough rule to get right over just attaching it to your Jack, because power-up itself does a lot of what the Jack Marshall was going to do for you anyways. The only time I got away with it was the Iron Lich Overseer with the Seether, because the Seether already got a free attack, so the Iron Lich Overseer was giving it more with Dark Shroud and a free attack out of it, but... Yeah, I'm not sure if we'll see a lot of Jack Marshalls, honestly, out of this more. Like, I get that the Irregulars does things for them, so maybe we'll...
I like what they did with Jack Marshall, but I think it's just not quite there. Might need a little bit
There's more, so much but... Jack Marshall, though, that maybe we'll see Jack Marshall get a look at CID when Mercs come around.
Maybe. That could be interesting.
Yeah, you know. Mercs has a lot of Jack Marshalls.
Right, if there's one faction they're going to look at Jack Marshall in, it would be...
Yeah, that makes sense. They have a theme force kind of built around it.
Right. With it, so...
I think it definitely is going to be Magnus II, Osram, and then maybe you get a player who wants to play Gaston, because he's obviously a perfectly fine caster, too, instead of one of those other two in the Laelies theme force.
I... think, though, that we may see some Ashlyn as well.
You could. Some people really just love Ashlyn, so they're going to play her.
Yeah, some of her changes, though, are quite good. Just, you know, she had little buffs coming out of CID over the summer, and a lot of them were quite strong when it comes to her survivability, her output with things, and distraction getting 2 extra inches was huge in making that spell viable when you don't have a Arknode.
Yeah.
With it. So, and her feat, talking about feats, her feat is just beyond brutal.
Yeah. Her feat's pretty hilarious, too, from what I've heard, when your opponent has, like, signs of portents or that kind of thing.
You just, like, saying that spell's name.
Or just, like, I mean, Cody, I mean, one of our Metoff players described, you know, being under Ashlyn feet and popping Knight's Exemplar mini feet with Hand of Fate on them and just rolling, like, 7 dice per attack. Dropping the 2 lowest and the 2 highest. Things like that.
That's fair.
Just absurd, absurd things.
That would be funny. Yeah, she's definitely in the argument of how many dice can I roll in one roll in War Machine.
Right.
She's always going to be a part of that situation. So, all right. So, that's our thoughts on War Machine. How about Hordes? First up, we have Trollbloods. This is one where we may see Trollbloods become one of the hottest factions in 2018.
Yeah.
I know that's weird to say.
Yeah, yeah. None of us play trolls, but, you know, they're definitely going to see a huge uptick. I mean, the troll community was super, super thankful to PP about the CID gift.
Well, I think the core here that you're going to see is Madrak 1 with champions.
Yeah, it's really strong if you haven't played against it, which I haven't yet, but... I mean, it's just, you can just be told what it does. I mean, defense 16, tough, no knockdown, champions that have Sanguine Bond that can then heal on Madrak feet, that will kill you, that will swing back at you pretty hard.
With Guided Hand.
With Guided Hand is pretty pretty powerful.
Yep.
That also, if they want to feat preemptively, his feat prevents charging as well, right?
You can't charge or be attacked.
Right. So if you have something with like grievous wounds or that kind of thing, he can use his feet to charged stop you from
slam attacked.
Yeah, his feet can just be used to stop you from charging him if you have a way to prevent healing or something that would prevent the other part of his feet.
Right. So it's cutting down that threat as well.
Yeah, I mean champions are generally out threat, but not when you can't charge them.
I guess the question is what's the downside of Magic 1? You're still talking about a caster who is Fury 5, and all these things work within said control range.
He does have the Rune Bearer now, which does give him the +2 inches of control range, though.
Yeah.
That helps.
That is huge, because in Steamroller 2017, I think it's a big deal to have to spread out a little bit. This idea of sitting in a tight brick in the center of the board anymore is kind of outdated, and actually might be one of the reasons why where he is going to be good and probably the core of Troll's pairings, he might make them manageable to an extent. Looking at things like Spread the Net and such, where you really need to spread out a little bit to be able to control the scenario with it, that by being able to pack these things in tightly may cause an issue. And then with that in mind, we have this nice brick. The question is what can that brick not solve?
Well, Adam, you've played against Cold Grandma, or Cold Grandma.
Yeah.
She's been...
Grandma!
Cold Grandma, she's been called.
She's surprisingly good. I think when I looked at her at first, I didn't realize some of the abilities she does for them. Just the Signs importance, basically, on her own spells is really good. And then, you know, you can take her with Mulg in that one theme. And it just... having an arc node with her is really dumb.
Yeah, she seems like a fine option to pair with Madrek because she offers a different kind of denial with the clouds. Her feat's a great denial feat.
And the theme you're talking about is Power of Dunia, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, she just has a lot of versatility. I mean, Madrek doesn't want to see something that is going to go into his champions and do a large amount of damage to where Sanguine Bond isn't useful. And she is a nice way to, you know, prevent that just by, you know, if you can't see through clouds, then you can't charge me for most of the game, or you're going to be, you know, you're going to be blind, or you're going to be -2 to hit, and you're going to have armor 20, so maybe 22 Earthborns behind those clouds. So it's a different kind of problem.
The thing I wonder, though, going into 2018, is that everyone was so excited about Magic 1. And Cold Grandma's got the new nice shiny factor and a cloud wall and all that kind of fun stuff. The question here, though, is what is the Dark Horse caster of 2018 for Trolls? And I'm going to put one out there. Grim Angus. He got a buff.
Yep.
In CID, and everyone seems to be forgetting about him.
Yep.
He gained what Haley lost, or Denager lost. He still stops charges with his feet. And yeah, it's only a 12-inch control area with the possibility of being 14 inches, so it can get up to that Denagra aspect of it. But we're saying that his feet is up there for ultimate control feet. Out of trolls.
It's really powerful. He was my... when I played trolls in Mark II, when I first started playing, he was my favorite troll caster. And yeah, he had his feet had a very similar effect in Mark II because speed buffs just prevented charging, and it's an incredible... I mean, his typical list likes to shoot you up a bunch, and then when you finally get close enough to close distance, he feats on you, and then he pretty much gets a guaranteed round of additional shooting.
I think his downside, though, is his spell list isn't amazing.
No, but Wield Secrets is a great spell. Pathfinder and Hunter as an upkeep is really, really good.
Right.
I mean, that's excellent. But the rest of his spell list is not...
And it's Pathfinder that can go on a beast.
It can go on a beast, right. But the rest of his spell list, especially without Arknodes is not, well, it's not great.
He has a sneaky, it's not a spell, but he has a sneaky ability with Headhunter that can go along with that Pathfinder on a beast, and that's giving it a free charge and plus two movement.
Yeah, his guns are awesome. I mean, he can either get free, essentially boundless charge to his heavies, if he, or just, you know, war beasts, or if his heavies are going to have trouble hitting something, casting snipe on himself from his impaler or bomber, and then shooting it with a snare gun to knock it down is.
I think one of the big things is he can do this from safety, range 13 gun without snipe. There's not a lot of things getting to him.
No, and he can also just cast Wield Secrets on himself, and walk up and shoot you with shoot your caster with a 12-inch snare gun that ignores cover, and he also ignores stealth, and then you're knocked down, probably staring down a whole bunch of bombers and palers and war wagons and highwaymen.
He's definitely playing this game himself. So, any dark horse from you, Adam?
I was actually thinking about Gumbajorn.
Okay.
I
see that we're back to Sigmar casters.
Yeah, no. I just think the ability he has snipe, right?
Yes.
Yeah, to give that to the pygmies is really good. Because they get up to range 18.
Bushwhackers?
Yeah. And that's much farther than a lot of people can reach.
He's probably one of the best casters for Glacier King as well.
Yeah, I mean, Rockwall is a great spell, too. Rockwall can do a lot of cool things. It's a little... I mean, we're seeing a little less huge bases, or at least Colossals now. Rockwall used to be a huge problem if you were playing a Colossal, and he had a Colossal, because it could just effectively prevent your Colossal from almost ever charging his or getting in melee with his, unless he got to...
Yeah, but that's why I'm saying Glacier King's so huge, because it can block things getting to your king.
Right, right. It can block heavies even pretty well. Not as well as another huge base, but...
Yeah, and it's got RFP on a stick.
He does have RFP and magical weapons on a stick. It's true. An Explosivo being an upkeep, he can theoretically upkeep it, cast it on himself, shoot, and then cast it on something else for only three focus.
Bombers.
Three fury to, total, so...
Bombers, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's excellent on bombers, obviously.
Yeah.
Or maybe even the War Wagon.
The War Wagon is a great target. even Bushwhackers. I mean, well, it's only one model, but sometimes that's all you need is to lead a CRA into something.
Oh, Gunbjorn. Where you rise from the ashes.
Such a bad caster in Mark II, and now he's definitely excellent.
All right, so that's our trolls there. We're saying watch out for Grim Angus with a side of Gunbjorn. They're not together, but probably paired with Madrak 1.
Madrak 1 and or Colgrima.
Let's just say your name correctly.
Colgrima.
Then we have Circle Orbros.
your prior love.
Yeah, it's my prior love. Fell out of favor. I tried a couple games of them in Mark III. They're fine. I think their big issue right now is they are low on the totem pole for me. In a lot of cases because they don't have a deep bench, I think, in this case. They have two main casters, maybe a third, I think. And that might be it. And that hurts to talk about. There's a possibility that there is a fourth there. But outside of that, I'm not sure if we see a lot of competitiveness there. I think we see the main two being Baldur 2 and Una 2.
Yeah.
Especially with the new Living Beast theme, being able to play a lot of Griffins and getting free dodges every turn being a huge issue. And the Wolds, where you have to play them differently in Baldur 2 now. There's no longer like a double Wold Wrath list, like we said, double Colossal, double Gargantuan. Isn't necessarily a thing yet, but the buffs that they got are a big boon for them. Boulder 2's biggest issue was being able to put out damage, and now with the Stone Shaper giving them pseudo choir buffs, it's just a huge boon for their abilities there. with it. But I think that's where it's limited. I think the only other two outside of that that could be relatively decent or playable might be Kruger 2, who really fell from flavor at one point, and he might be playing the Wold theme too, being able to get out the sheer quantity of TKs that he can do, but also Tanith.
Yeah. Tanith is interesting. Tanith is weird with the new the new beast theme, obviously, with her feet interaction.
Yeah, her feet interaction is counterproductive to helping out with the Animi. It puts it back up to one, even if it's at zero, which is a weird, odd interaction. I understand why they ruled it that way, but I'll be honest, I don't think I'm playing her in her Living Beast theme. I think I'm playing Loki with her in Bones of Orbros.
Yeah, interesting.
That's different.
Yeah, I think the plus two again made that very viable.
Wold's with plus two strength plus Dark Shroud is a good place to be for them.
Right. So there's a lot of aspects to it there as well. Along with Admonition just being dirty, you can still play Loki. Because even though they can only use constructs, since it's her beast, you can take it with it. So you get her biggest boon, which is playing Loki. I truthfully think a lot of the reasons why she is competitive is because Loki's silly.
Yeah, Loki's a real ridiculous model. He's just limited by
Loki and Guardians in a list. You could just have a ton of shield guards.
Yeah.
To play around with, making her immune to shooting, which is one of her biggest downsides, unless she's getting her prowl off. So she's definitely got some strong aspects there, but I'm not sure, unless you guys can think of any other caster, I'm not sure if I see any other casters being crazy viable.
Nah, I see Baldur 2 and Una 2 all the time, and that's... I think that's what you're going to see for a while until... sadly, I think it's, for the most part, until... a circle CID happens.
I think there might be a thing for Kaya too. Just because she can hit twice if you pull it off right.
Okay.
And being that animuses are cheaper, you can get the lightning strike off and everything. I think there might be a thing for Kaya too, but other than that, yeah, I think that's...
Kaya 2's problem, I think, is going to be just with this scenario packet where you can only afford to pull back so much,
right?
And give away points. I mean, that's always been her problem, even in previous scenario packets, was pulling, you know, getting that alpha, pulling back, and then her opponent scores, you know, a couple of control points, and then she's kind of left scrambling after that to get back into the game.
Yeah. Certainly an issue, but you know, hopefully we'll see more when they get their Tharn CID. We get more of a out of circle. I just think they lost a lot of what they did in Mark 2 and are trying to find themselves more in Mark 3. They used to be that big hit and run faction all the way around, and they've lost quite a bit of that. So next up for Hordes, we have the Legion of Everblight.
Okay, so I played a bit of Legion last year. Played mostly Fianna when she first came out. And I think she's going to be one of the ones you see still. But her list has got to be different just because you can't really afford to play that, you know, six or seven heavy list anymore with no units or in relatively few solos.
She's on ADR.
She is on ADR. That's a big help. But I think you're going to... I still think you're going to see her in Oracles of Annihilation, but you're going to start seeing her with some, you know, some Hex Hunters, maybe Black Frost Shards sprinkled in, and a few less heavies. Maybe like two Angels, two Nerefs, you know, something like that, and a Seraph. Mm. Little lighter battle group, maybe. But more scenario presence. I mean, she can still, you know, get up the board incredibly fast and get a good alpha off and sprint with the Nerefs and then be under feet and take up more than half the board under her feet. and that can be a massive problem for opponents. But how about you, Adam? You got a Legion caster? You think?
Abby are we 2 out of locals. Oh,
Abby 2. Abby 2.
Ah, you love Abby 2, Paul.
Playing Grimkin, she is the nightmare. She just gets you in every every stage of the game, but every stat. But go ahead, Adam. Talk about Abby 2.
She's a pretty strong caster. Just the ability to give most of your stats a +2/+2. You know, she can do it with what was that, killing?
Alpha Hunter.
Alpha Hunter.
Yeah.
Just all the time, and then her feet flying in reach is just so good. Just and then she repos now. You know, she doesn't have to spend that focus to teleport back anymore.
And we're seeing her primarily locally in Oracles, right? That's what we're.
Yeah, and one cute interaction with Oracles is that one of the units of Blight Wasps can get Apparition because they're a unit. Which makes their with Alpha Hunter brings their threat range and with Alpha Hunter plus feet, I think makes one of the units 18 inches.
Did they rule?
I think
I don't pay too much attention to the War Beast units, but did they rule that they can score on either zone?
I don't believe they can. I think they can only score rectangles.
They can only score the beast side.
Okay. They only score the beast side of it, but I mean, still one of those units, I believe, on feet turn, when you pop feet and trigger Alpha Hunter plus Apparition, I think one unit threats 18 inches, the other one threats 16.
It's
pretty incredible.
Hope out of PP that we see more of these War Beast units. I feel like it's something that could be interesting for Hordes. That Hordes would get that. We don't see War Machine being able to get, but they seem to have just stopped with Scorn and Legion in that aspect and didn't go any further with it. So,
yeah, I mean, I'd like to see more of them, but Legion's going to have a CID soon, and I think we'll probably talk more about Legion when they get their CID, because I know it's going to be mostly Elgrin. But I think we're going to see a couple releases. I mean, if you look at the Legion's biggest problem right now is that their War Beasts are just so expensive. I mean, there's Nerifs, which are 12 points and are great for their cost, but and Angels are still fine. But you look at, like, the Carnivian at 19 points with an 11-18 stat line at speed 5, and then you're just wondering why you spent 19 points on this guy for the most part. Same thing with the Ravagor. I don't think I've played against a Ravagor yet in Mark 3. So,
yeah, so we might see some of that, and I think we'll stop with Legion there only for the fact that we do know the CID is coming soon. After the CID's over, I'm sure we'll have long discussions about them.
I think it's Abby 2, Thagrosh 1. Thagrosh 1 is going to be great in the Ogryn theme, most likely, depending on what changes. But I feel like Abby 2, Thagrosh 1, and Fianna, some combination of those, and Thagrosh 1 and Fianna 2 are both on ADR, so, and they pair pretty well together.
Yeah, because we're seeing Thags in the Nephilim theme right now, right?
Yeah, we're already seeing Thags in the Nephilim theme, and most likely I'd be willing to bet that Thags in Ogryn theme and paired with Fianna with a good beast list would be an excellent.
What's the Kailissa? No, what's the
battle box one?
Kailis 2. I think you might see him in the Ogryn theme.
It's possible.
Yeah, like I said, I think we're gonna have to unveil this a little bit more once we see more out of the end of the CID and where they're gonna go with it, because we're gonna see all kinds of crazy stuff.
They're also gonna get a new caster.
An too. Ogryn Cav.
Right. Ogryn Cav, Ogryn Caster.
So, with it. All right. And then next up we have Scorn. This is a faction that I feel like needs to be played a lot more.
Yes.
Wow, did they make out well recently? So, between the new themes, I'm not sure they have a dead theme.
No. I don't think so. Right. I don't know that they have a dead caster either.
They're really? Not a dead caster, yeah. Well, what's the question there is what do we think are their top three casters here? For me, it feels like Resheth and Zal 2 goes a long way.
I think those two are, especially Resheth is argued, like, I don't see how Resheth is not the strongest. Resheth and Winds of Death with a couple Siege Animantraxes is really terrifying.
Yep.
I was thinking of, was a Makeda with cats.
Yeah, Makeda cats could be, that third list that we're looking at there. You know, Makeda cats had the downside that they didn't have a theme, and then the theme apocalypse dropped, and sure enough, now they have a theme. Not only did they get a theme, they got something that really was useful to them, and that was RFP on a stick. I mean, so the cats move so fast that they're kind of like a ranged RFP attack almost.
Yeah, and the cats laugh about things, all these things in the game that say, like, you can't give orders or can't charge. They just don't care about any of those things.
Yeah, because they're leaping, and since charging doesn't stop leap anymore.
Right, right. Things like Rebuke. Rebuke is like, they just don't care about...
And just to be specific, that is Makeda 2 cats.
Right, so, right.
Just to make sure that we're being specific with that. But Resheth, having the debuffs that he has, can really take on a lot of lists. He has the ability to become a spellcaster and throw out a lot of spells and such. And then Zal 2 with the Exalted theme is just plain scary. It's got a high cast or high cost of entry because you need to buy so many units of Immortals.
Yes.
Because you're probably playing 3 units of them. But if that is something that you invest in, I think that is a huge, strong core to Scorn. And I'll put this out there. Being a Minions player, that Scorn bug at the edge of me, and I probably will never do it, but that Scorn bug at the edge just is looking at me going, there's a Minions theme. You pretty much just need some casters.
Just buy a caster.
And I've thought about playing that. I think we'll see some of that theme as well with things. Maybe some... Morgul 1 or 2.
Morgul 2 with it. Seems excellent.
Yeah, Morgul 1, 2 with the plus speed and armor, or speed and strength spell.
Yeah.
Also is
I feel like strength. Rage is not something that Scorn was supposed to get.
That's fair. They are paying the hefty price that Minions pay for it, though, at 16 points. But
yeah, it's just they have easy access to a nice plus 5 damage buff on anything. I mean, their stuff already hits pretty hard. It just means that now, with plus 5 strength, they're just punching straight through armor buffed anything.
It feels like the biggest buff, though, that they got was out of the Battle Engine CID. Themes were huge, but the Siege Animanthrax, that thing might be up there with the TEP as being the best Battle Engine.
I don't understand why it's so fast. Why is it speed 8?
Because Derp Turtles get boogieing.
Yeah, it's just a giant turtle, I don't know.
I don't understand why it is either, but it is, and it's here to stay, and it's got an absurd number of attacks for its point costs, and it has ways to strengthen those attacks, so sure enough, we see that it's going to be a big deal.
And also, we can't forget about Jalam, just because he's brand new.
Oh, new and shiny.
So yeah. He's going to get played.
He does seem good, though.
He's good. He probably takes the place of Resheth. Because he wants a similar list to Resheth, I think.
And he might see that with the new and shiny aspect of it. That's
true. Yeah, I mean, he wants to play probably Winds of Death, so you don't really want two of those lists. But
and you might see people going away from Resheth Winds of Death just to play something different for a while, because Resheth Winds of Death has basically been the only theme list that Scorn has had until the theme apocalypse.
Yeah.
So now they can really try out some different things, like Makeda cats and theme.
I think that Adam brought up. I think overall, though, you see Resheth in Winds of Death, Makeda 2 cats in, I can't even think of the name of the theme, Masters of War, I think, and Zal 2 in the Immortal theme. Some combination of those three seems pretty strong.
Yeah, Zal 2 is pretty tough not to crack.
I remember watching, like, one of the WTC games where it was against, like, Ghost Fleet with Zal 2, and he was just, the Zal 2 player just was getting destroyed, but lo and behold, Zal 2 has, you know, 19 fury on him or whatever it is, or 21 fury, and he, you know, spell assassinates Denegra in cover because He's just got a ridiculous amount of fury.
It's certainly something. But yeah, I expect to see quite a bit more Scorn over the next year of 2018. I would not be surprised to see them starting to take down some tournaments here and there.
Yeah, get your Scorn back out, people. Really good.
And then second to last, we have Grimkin, the current new and shiny.
Yes, this faction's amazing.
He's not biased, people. He's not biased.
They do so many tricky things. It's so much fun. Oh my gosh, there's just no better feeling in the game when you trigger Sacrifice Arcana on someone and heal like 80 boxes of damage.
Oh man, no.
If so it doesn't delicious. Go down in 4 hours, please see a doctor.
Yeah, oh, it's so good.
Between Grimkin and the Buffalo Bills making the playoffs.
Oh, my God.
Paul's having a hell of a day.
This has been the greatest day of my life. Like, this is up there with, like, getting married. But I think the Dreamer is, I think, objectively the strongest Grimkin caster for a lot of reasons, but I do think you're gonna see most Grimkin players playing some combination of their ADR casters most of the year, just because Champions events seem like they're getting a little more popular. And even if you're not getting the specialists, practicing with the two ADR casters is pretty fine.
So is the assumption there that Heretic and Old Witch will probably be the ADR pairing, because Dreamer and Child didn't make it out of the six?
Yeah, I think that's the place you start, is Heretic and Old Witch 3. Heretic playing in Dark Menagerie and Old Witch playing in Bump of the Night. I mean, you can build some silly Bump of the Night lists with Old Witch that are, you know, like 30 Dreadrots and 20 Hollowmen, and then your specialists are two units of piggybacks with the Twilight Sisters. Yes. So if someone doesn't have a good answer to that and your Hollowmen aren't great, you can swap out your Hollowmen. You've got a whole two shield wall units with Impervious Flesh that you can bring back.
Just don't got
a couple guys a turn for some great, you know, staying power. And Heretic can kill. I mean, he can set up to kill anything. I mean, he hits so hard. And King of Nothing is fine too, but he's just not what I like. But you can build a perfectly strong list with him. And Wanderer is also great. I do think Heretic and Old Witch 3 is what you're going to see. But I mean, I wouldn't fault anyone for taking King of Nothing or Wanderer in either theme force for either of those.
Yeah, the Wanderer gives me, I think, the hardest of times, because I can never kill him.
He is incredibly difficult to kill.
I mean, with Starcrossed and the Road tokens, just, and as his own innate arcana that just says, I'm going to teleport over here.
Yeah. Yeah.
He is probably the most, and this is going to be controversial, but he is probably the most survivable Grimkin caster. I know the Child is often thought to be that, but I think he is actually more survivable, because once you get to know him and learn how to place his road markers, between that, like Adam already said, Starcrossed, it's just so hard to catch him.
I mean, if you deliver a quality heavy to the Child when she only has like one fury or something, she'll die.
Big pig, go!
Yeah, Dreamer, he'll just, I mean, until his Trump Arcana's gone or he's triggered another one, and then you can go in on him. I mean, while he's got his Trump Arcana up, if you send a heavy into him, you're just giving away a heavy for free. He's just going to pop away somewhere else, and, you know, your heavy's just going to be sitting out there in the wind, ready to be killed. So,
and then, last but not least, we have minions. And we'll make minions relatively short, because what we're going to do on our next episode is actually talk quite a bit about minions, talk about CID updates, how they affect them, and just minions in 2018 as a whole. But me being the minions player, the big pair I think we're going to see is the pair that I'm currently playing, and that is Barnabas 1 and Rask. And the reason why I say that is, is Rask is hands down the best minions caster. Doesn't mean that there aren't things that can replace him, but with both of them combined, you basically say, hey guys, you don't get to play much for the range game here. And I think that's huge, being able to deny that in somebody's list pair, because it's very uncommon right now to see a list pair that doesn't have at least one range oriented list towards it. And then I can start looking at the melee list that they're going to play and choose the list that I want to play with it now.
And remember that Time Walk feat? Yeah, his is similar.
Yeah, his is very similar. Not being able to basically target somebody with attacks, charges, anything of those nature of that nature outside of 5 inches. So it's kind of a weird, stealthy kind of thing, but better
with that. So. There's nothing worse than having Rask go first, run up the table as far as he wants, and then, you know, turn two, he runs up farther feats, and you can either back up and lose on scenario, or you have to put some stuff forward, and there's nothing, at least nothing armored, that he can't kill. if you throw 30 infantry models at him, you might be okay. But
the big question is who do we think that the third caster would be? I know you guys know what I'm playing. That doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to be the Minions community's thought process for third casters. Anyone have an idea?
I kind of felt Arcadius might be a thing.
Yep. It's kind of hard not, or for Arcadius not to be a thing.
Yeah. We'll work for food. It's just gives him pretty much everything he wants.
Yeah. They basically took his base list and said, same with Rask for this matter, took his base list that was always played throughout Mark II and said, here, have some free shit.
Have some free speed. Which is something that both those casters absolutely love.
In Arcadius, Adam's bringing up, but Arcadius actually got Will Work for Food nerfed during CID because people were spraying into the opening lines of people's factions.
Right.
It wasn't okay. I understand why they did it or why they changed it.
And that's what CID's for, is catch those kind of things.
That's true.
So,
but no, I agree that Arcadius definitely will be a pretty obvious third run caster. He didn't make ADR, either did Rask. Barnabas did, though. And I think that it's possible that, since we keep talking about new and shiny, that it's possible that Jaga Jaga might end up being the third caster for a lot of people in Gators, or in Minions as a whole. And I say that because, I say that mainly because of she's a new shiny, and she has our namesake spell, Signs Importance, now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one.
And the feat changed a lot.
The feat got completely reworked, so much so that they renamed it. And then, with that in mind, not only did we find that the feat changed, but also the fact that we just got a new huge based model in Minions that we won't go too far into, but it is possible that between Signs Importance and Battle Host?
Yeah, Battle Host.
That it might be one of the better Drokodile casters out there.
I think for a third caster, Maylock. New Maylock is just awesome. Maylock in Blind Water theme with 10 to 15 Gatorman Posse, and you can play a Drakodile if you want. I don't think it's ideal with him, but it's definitely fine. I think he feels a little bit better to me with like a Rassler and maybe one or two Rasslers and a Blind Walker for a Mortality Arc node, but
He may be the only caster in Minions that actually want to take Gatorman Posse.
Oh, yeah. His Gatorman Posse are awesome.
Gatorman Posse are, unfortunately, in my opinion, not very good.
Not his Gatorman Posse, though.
No, his Gatorman Posse is better with Mortality, being able to fix the mat issue with them, but also, obviously, fixing the armor issue. But he's always done that, right? He's always fixed their armor. He does it better now. Being able to give +2 armor every turn to all of his infantry models, plus his feet as well. But I think what we see there is that we might find that Gatorin's posse's limitations being mat 6 might just end up making him not as good as we want him to, or not as good as I want him to.
It's possible. I think it's just still a strong scenario list. Yeah. I mean, it's 15, 8 bucks.
Oh, that's true. It's, armor 20. He definitely does that combined.
Guys.
He definitely does that combined arm, or not combined arms, but combination of beast and units well. So.
Right.
All right, so that is our meta predictions for 2018. And as I already mentioned in our next episode, we're going to talk about minions as a whole, where they're at, where what we think is good with them, what we're excited about that is coming out for them in the next couple months. And Paul and Adam will... tell me what they dislike about the minions that I play against.
Yeah, I think we ran a little long this time, but I think our goal seems to be like an hour and 15.
Yeah.
But, you know, for a first episode, though, it feels good to be able to talk for about a lot of things and cover a lot of ground.
Yeah, we definitely had a lot to talk about this first episode with the subject matter.
And so. Going through each faction.
Yeah.
So
until next time.
Thank you.
Signing off.